From our studios in downtown Portland, Oregon, this is a Coin6 Digital exclusive.
We set sail on this new sea because there is new knowledge to be gained. But why, some say, the moon? Why choose this as our goal? And they may well ask, why climb the highest mountain? Why, 35 years ago, fly the Atlantic? Why does Rice play Texas? We choose to go to the moon. We choose to go to the moon. We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other thing. Not because they are easy, but because they are hard. Because that goal will serve to organize and measure the best of our energies and skills. Because that challenge is one that we're willing to accept, one we are unwilling to postpone, and one we intend to win.
From Dallas, Texas, the flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time, 2 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, some 38 minutes ago.
And its guidance is internal. 12, 11, 10, 9, ignition sequence starts. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. 0, all engine running. Liftoff, we have a liftoff, 32 minutes past the hour. Liftoff on Apollo 11.
Tranquility Base here, the Eagle has landed.
Here, men from the planet Earth first set foot upon the moon, July 1969 AD. We came in peace for all mankind.
That's one small step for man.
Hello, I am Ian Costello. Welcome to 50 Years and Counting. COIN looks back at the 1969 mission to the moon. As part of our celebration of the event that changed the course of human history, I had a chance to talk to three men about the Apollo 11 mission. We talked about how they remember it, why it was so important, and where the space race goes from here. For this podcast, I catch up with John Cowans. After spending three decades teaching school, he moved on to work with NASA in their jet propulsion lab. He tells me how the moon landing inspired a generation of school kids and how everything we do, from driving across bridges to camping in the woods, got better because of Apollo 11.
My name is John Cowans. I'm a retired school teacher. I taught elementary, middle school, high school. And I did that for 33 years. For the last 21 years, I've been the NASA JPL Solar Ambassador to the solar system. And I go out to schools and I do school assemblies and do all kinds of little shows and demonstrations of some of the new discoveries in space.
What's JPL?
A Jet Propulsion Lab that's located in Pasadena.
John, if you could a little bit, talk to me about overall, what do you think life on Earth was like before we went to the moon?
It just seems like we were mostly just recovering from world wars and just trying to get life reestablished and to get jobs going and get families started and try to reestablish normalcy. Right up to about 1957, and that's when the Russians decided to launch Sputnik. Then that changed a lot of things.
Can you tell me what you remember about the months and weeks and days leading up to the Apollo 11 launch?
So I was just a kid when Sputnik was put into orbit, and I remember everybody in the United States was scared to death that the Russians were going to take over our country and all that stuff, and so we pretty much had to establish ourselves and compete. And so it was quite a competition between the two countries. The Apollo program, employed about 400,000 people to put, you know, people on the moon. And so from that, those 400,000 people had to develop all kinds of new technology in order for us to go to the moon. So it was a tremendous amount of work being done before we were putting astronauts in the in space capsules and launching them to the moon. So that was exciting to see all the different things that were being produced in order for astronauts to go to the moon and land there.
Can you go ahead and walk me through your Apollo 11 story from launch to landing to splashdown?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember I was glued to the television. I remember sitting in the living room and watching the launch on a black and white television. Walter Cronkite was covering the launch. They were interviewing some of the older astronauts that launched in the Mercury program and the Gemini program, just asking all kinds of questions about things. When the rocket was launched, I remember that was really exciting because it didn't launch fast. I was expecting the rocket to go up really fast, but, you know, the rocket was over 300 feet tall, about 360 feet tall. And so it lifted off the ground very slowly. And just to watch that and watch chunks of ice fall off the rocket as it was rising was pretty amazing. As it rose higher and higher and higher, I mean, you could see the long flame from the engines, the five engines below, and the roar. And as it just kept going higher and higher, it was just getting more and more excited. And then they were showing us, I remember they were showing these old models of how the rocket was going to go around the Earth a few times. And then almost like a slingshot effect where you go around the Earth a few times and then you launch the other rockets that takes you into a straight line and start heading towards the moon. So just to watch all that was pretty exciting. Then I remember it was like I was expecting them to get there that day because I was just a kid and I was thinking, okay, this is going to be a short launch and they'll get there right away. Well, it took 3 days to get there. So, you know, I just kept watching on the news, you know, how far they had moved into space towards the moon. And finally, when they started to get closer to the moon, television coverage was a lot more. And so they were starting to orbit the moon and they had to pull out all their equipment, the lunar module and all these things to land on the moon. And so there wasn't much television showing what was going on there. There was just lots of models on television explaining what they're doing. And then finally, I remember as they started to approach the moon and begin landing, we heard a lot later, but, you know, they slowly landed and we watched the signals as they were trying to avoid a few boulders so they wouldn't land on something like that. And then they landed and then there was some static, I remember, of the conversation going on between Neil Armstrong and Houston. And that's when they landed. And that's when I remember everybody was just, you know, in very joyous spirits and things. And everybody, I remember they said something like 500 million people or 600 million people watched this landing. And so that was the biggest, most powerful broadcast, I think, ever. Just glued to the television and in the living room with my family. My dad was very excited about it. He was the one that got me all interested in astronomy and space and all that. So I remember just sitting with him and watching this quite often. The competition was fierce. I think our country wanted to prove to the world that we wanted to be, you know, top achievers and we wanted to be very advanced in technology and to show our superiority. And the Russians wanted to do the same thing. And so this competition to get to the moon first, after John Kennedy, President Kennedy, announced that. I mean, that was when, you know, the race was on as soon as he made that speech. It seemed like, too, in schools, all of a sudden, what you're learning in school was very, very important. And it just seemed like there was a lot of support for education, lots of support for teachers, curriculum. I mean, they wanted students to just achieve, you know, and learn as much as they can. because of this big space race.
What do you see as the long-lasting technical ramifications and benefits from the race to the moon and successfully landing on the lunar surface?
Because of this, the landings on the moon, there were so many products that were developed as a result. I mean, this was all new. So scientists, engineers, all kinds of brilliant minds got together and had to create some pretty amazing products in order to go to the moon. So everything like solar panels, that was a huge development that we still use today and will use in the future for a long, long time. That was a big, big spinoff product. Even our cell phones, those little cameras that we have on our cell phones, that is also a NASA product. Space blankets, those silvery looking things, that we put in our backpacks and go hiking up in the mountains, and we pull those out in case we need to get warmed up. Some of the shock absorbers for bridges, that was designed by NASA. The Saturn V rocket was so powerful that it shook the ground, it shook the launch pad. And so they had to find ways to absorb that sound. Otherwise, the rocket would have exploded due to vibrations. So by making these pretty expensive and very clever shock absorbers, we now use those in our bridges. I know San Francisco, the Oakland Bay Bridge has some of these shock absorbers. Here's another good one. Vacuum sealed foods. I mean, when astronauts went to the moon, they had food. We had to figure out a way to allow food to travel those distances, without spoiling. So by freeze drying food, that was a product that we use today everywhere. I mean, they're great even if we go backpacking up into the mountains in Oregon. We use some of those freeze dried foods. All we have to do is add water and a little heat and away we go.
It was a seminal moment in technology then.
Oh, it was amazing. I lived in La Grande, Oregon in the northeast corner, and I played tennis there, and at Eastern Oregon University, they had outdoor tennis courts, and they covered it with this big white material. It looked like a big white bubble. And the first time I walked up to it, I realized that material is like a canvas, but it was different than that. And I learned later that material is the same material that they used in the spacesuits to walk on the moon.
The stuff in the tennis bubble was the same material as the spacesuits?
Yes, as the spacesuits. And this material was able to withstand, intense, sunlight and all kinds of weather. And so that big cover was used there at Eastern Oregon University for at least 10 years. I moved to Grants Pass later, but that material was still, as far as I know, was still in use after 10 years. So that was pretty amazing to see. Here's something else that's kind of interesting, too, was when Apollo 1, when Grissom and I think it was White and Chaffee, when those astronauts were sitting in the space capsule, of course, they died because of an electric spark and they were using pure oxygen inside the capsule. But because of that, scientists had to put their minds together and come up with some kind of a fireproof material for suits. And so today we use that same material for our firefighters and some of our forest firefighters and so on.
We led this conversation with what do you think life was like on Earth before we went to the moon? Mm-hmm. Along with the technology, what do you think life is like on Earth after we went to the moon?
Well, we would certainly have a lot better technology than we've ever had before. Our communication systems around the Earth is excellent. Of course, they're still developing and trying to make things even better. But technology by far has skyrocketed, and I'm not sure if we're still skyrocketing at a very high angle or whether we've kind of flattened out.
Let's build on that a little bit, John, if we could. Why is it important for us to continue to explore the moon and space beyond? Some would argue that it's not really important to go back to the moon because we've been there, we've got what we need. We need to go beyond. What do you see as the importance of continued space exploration?
Well, the moon, from what I've been reading in the recently, we want to go back to the moon to also do some mining. We're finding out that the moon may have some materials that might be useful that we could produce something from. We also know that there's water on the moon, so we might be able to, convert the ice that's on the mountainsides that don't face the sun We can convert that ice into water and make, you know, do whatever we need to do with that. To go to Mars, we're going to have to develop some amazing material. Right now, we don't have the know-how to put humans on Mars yet because it's very, very dangerous. When Apollo 11 put two men on the moon, it was like a new springboard to launch into more scientific or into more space exploration. Exploration is what humans do. We've done that ever since we've been, you know, probably ever since we've discovered fire or discovered a way to float on water to go someplace. We're always looking for places to explore, to learn, to gain more knowledge, and to just keep, every time we explore something, we end up with more questions. And every time we come up with something new, there's always other ways to take a look at that. And that always brings more questions. So I think humans are very curious and want to explore. And I think we will always be that way. I mean, there's in space, there's a lot of questions. You know, we're starting to understand a little more about what's out there in deep space. To learn more about our universe helps us to understand why we're here. This is why it was exciting for me, is that all these new discoveries coming out, I'm really anxious to go into schools and share that. And when I do that, almost every student that I'm talking to, you know, their eyes are huge and they're listening and they're learning, and hopefully some of these kids, these students will keep that in mind as they go through school. And who knows, there may be a few that work for NASA and develop something amazing that they'll come back and share with their community, their state, you know, their nation.
Specifically with the students you're teaching and this region, what do you think the Apollo 11 mission meant specifically to Oregon and the Northwestern United States?
You know, it was the fact that made us, you know, number one in the world. I guess that was something that we all enjoyed. But I think also the products that NASA developed that we are using today is what we all appreciate. These spinoff products that NASA came up with has made our lives much, much better.
How do you think the Apollo 11 mission will be remembered on the 75th anniversary or the 100th anniversary?
Well, I think that's going to be a date that we'll never, ever forget. I think, you know, coming up here on the 20th, you know, that was, like you said, it was 50 years. You know, we cherish that memory of being there on the moon first. In 75 years or 100 years from now, we're still going to cherish the idea that we were the first ones to be on the moon. And we came together as a nation to make that possible. And that's just a proud achievement for all of us to enjoy and to always remember.
The one question I'd like to leave you with, what is the most important thing we should all always remember about Apollo 11?
The most important thing I think that we should remember about Apollo 11 is the 400,000 people who made it possible. You know, so many times we take a look at the three astronauts who went to the moon, one orbiting the moon, two walking on the moon surface and doing some things. We focus there. But for me, what I think is I can't help. I have to say I look at those 400,000 people who invented products, who built the rockets, who put all the electronics together, who designed and built and tested all these components that made it possible. I look at those 400,000 people, and that's men and women who put this stuff together and made it all possible for those astronauts to head for the moon and land there successfully. I mean, those 400,000 people had to work together. I'm sure they all didn't agree on every little thing, you know, but they came up with tremendous ideas. I mean, they had to work cooperatively. They had to, I'm sure they argued about a lot of things, but they're doing it in a way that made it all possible because they wanted the best for the astronauts. And so these 400,000 people, you know, every person from, I don't know, whoever created or whoever fed them all the way up to who built the very delicate electronic systems. My hat, and I salute all them because they were the ones that made it all possible. And that's what I really enjoyed was to learn about all these people who what their jobs were.
John Cowens, thank you very, very much for your time. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate, I love talking about this, so call
me
anytime.
That is very obvious.
The Coin6 Podcast Network is your home for all sorts of content you can't find anywhere else. Visit coin.com/coinpodcast to see our entire library. And you can always subscribe to all of the Coin6 Podcast on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.